Hi, this is Nancy Clare, and welcome to episode 25 of Speaking of Mysteries. This week's guest, Margot Frohley, is our first, hopefully of many, YA mystery writers. Hero Complex, the second of her Keaton School series of mysteries, will be published Tuesday, October 14th. The first in the series, Escape Theory, has been nominated for an Anthony Award for Best Children's or Young Adult Novel. The Anthony Awards will be announced in November at this year's BoucherCon in Long Beach, California. Especially in genre fiction, some of the best novels being written today are categorized as young adult. And after reading both of Margot's novels featuring Devon McIntosh, I'm of the opinion that young adults should not have these books all to themselves. Here's Margot Frohley.
Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. Our guest this week is Margot Frohley. Margot's second book in her Keaton School series, Hero Complex, is about to be released. Pub date is October 14th?
Correct.
And we're just going to jump in with the questions. And my first one is, what did you decide to do first, write a mystery or write a YA novel?
Oh, definitely write a YA novel. I was all gung-ho about this whole YA thing and wanted to jump into that world and the publishing world. And I definitely love teenage stories and had my own teenage angst years and was very into that. There's a lot of story to tell there. And it was maybe even later than I should have realized. I had the moment of, oh Lord, this is a mystery. And I'm not a huge mystery person. I did love reading Agatha Christie's growing up. I really do like mysteries, but I'm not as much of a mystery buff as some of my mystery buff friends might be. I kind of backpedaled, into becoming a bit of a genre writer, I think. So it was a very happy accident.
Well, I guess I'm going to jump forward to one of my last questions is when you were thinking of doing a YA novel, you did not do a dystopian one, which seems to, they almost seem to go together, you know, a dystopian YA novel. And I found that refreshing. Was there a reason you decided not to go dystopian?
Partly my editor, Dan Ehrenhaft, and I, we'd both gone to boarding school and we very much wanted to tell a boarding school story. So that was always kind of the driving force. And we kind of kept going deeper into that to find what became the Keaton School novels. But, dystopian, it just felt like, there's enough people doing it. I don't need to be that person. There isn't anything I felt like I could tell in dystopian that I couldn't tell in present day. And also kind of from a selling trend standpoint, I was hoping or kind of predicting, I don't know, that the pendulum would shift back at a certain point. And at some point, maybe, I don't know, the dystopian thing will feel a little passe. I guess that hasn't happened yet, but it just felt a little more timeless to me to not kind of follow a trend like that as well.
So you mentioned that both you and your editor are boarding school veterans. Is there anything specific that inspired your storyline about Devon McIntosh?
The original nugget of an idea actually came from Dan. We were talking about our boarding school experiences, and he'd been on the East Coast, and I'd been to a West Coast boarding school, which have their own degree of differences as well. And we really liked the idea of doing a West Coast boarding school story, just so it didn't feel like every other boarding school story, which most of them seem to take place on the East Coast. But the original nugget was this idea of a peer counselor and who are these teens within a world of teens who are giving people advice. And that kind of conflict I thought was so interesting of, you know, this is a teenager who has her own issues she's dealing with. She can read all the books she wants, but how is she in a position to be dispensing advice? And this had come from Dan, who had been sent to a teen counselor, peer counselor, when he was in boarding school, and had that experience of like, who the hell are you to tell me what to do? And I just thought that if you could play that correctly, that was a really interesting world of conflict.
That actually anticipated one of my questions. You answered the question of from the creative point of view, which came first, that Devin's interest in psychology and peer counseling. When did you decide to use psychological terms as your titles for your book?
That was pretty early on, because as I was writing the first book, Escape Theory, I liked that Devin is a very by the book kind of girl, and the rule books, and it goes back and forth. It's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing, because at boarding schools, it's a very rule oriented society. And so I think for her, the rules, for being such an outsider, the rules were a bit of a comfort of, it gave her something to hold on to when she knows very little about this world. And then I think as she kind of evolved into her Keaton life, you know, there was a push and pull of the rules became a crutch, or she hated them, but she needed them. And I think I started writing the Keaton School rule book. I started writing the peer counseling guidebook. And the deeper I got into that, it just felt like these are the terms and this kind of, you know, kind of grandfather rule book mentality was what was driving, was she was very stuck within. So that kind of started driving it a little bit more. And as an ongoing series, this felt like a fun way to stay true to that tone and that kind of choice.
Devin's fish out of water status at Keaton, the boarding school she attends, seems to be both advantageous and a challenge at the same time. Do you think her outsider status helps her see things more clearly, or the opposite, or both?
That's a good question. I think from the beginning, it was definitely for her, it was definitely a disadvantage of, this is all foreign to her. She doesn't know the way things work. You know, she doesn't know that the rules are sometimes more flexible than she thinks they are while she's busy clinging to the rule book. And that's what, you know, the Hutch character represents for her, is this person who's kind of like, yeah, that's more of a suggestion. You could sample the rules a little bit more, because he's that legacy student. So he's kind of the ultimate insider. I think as Devin goes on, the trick also with this peer counseling setup was, who are you as a student that you could interview peers in your own class, and really, you know, be in a position to be kind of that much more removed from them to be able to ask some questions that she was. So that's where I thought the outsider thing was a bit of a self-perpetuating thing for her. She became an outsider, and yet it was a safe place to kind of look upon the rest of the world. She kind of was like, and I think that kind of went with the psychology of it all, as somebody who was happier observing than being a part of, and that became more comfortable for her. So I think the outsider was a blessing and a curse for her, because she didn't like it, but it became kind of her comfortable role.
The adults in both Escape Theory and Hero Complex can be as obfuscating to Devin as her fellow students, or even more. And it just makes me wonder, what is it about adults that causes them to have amnesia about how rough it can be to be a teenager?
I you'd mentioned that. I thought that was a really great question, because, you know, I'm 30 or something. And I very vividly remember, the frustration and the angst and, you know, the lot of the emotions I felt when I was at boarding school and, you know, wanted life to be a certain way, and it wasn't going that way necessarily. It's tough, because I think if the adults were helpful to Devin, they're in a position to potentially do a little too much work for her. But I thought what was interesting in this world is, not only do they not really see her point of view, but nobody wants to be liable for her point of view at a certain point. If there's something of, if they kept her at arm's length, it became safer for the adults. And I do think, boarding school, it's an interesting thing, because sometimes you get very friendly with your teachers and they become kind of your hangout buddies, which is not a normal high school experience. I wanted Devin to really be her own island a little bit. So part of it was, yes, adults don't totally hear what 15-year-olds are saying, 16-year-olds are saying. And part of it was, I really wanted Devin to just really have to figure this out on her own.
How many Keaton School novels are you planning at this point? You've written two.
Written two. Right now there's three that I've worked out, basically. So the third one would kind of take us further down this path that the second one took us down. At that point, it's three. Really, that's Devin's story. I would be interested in doing more. At a certain point, Devin has to graduate. I can't keep her in suspended animation, I think, for too long. So at that point, I actually wouldn't mind staying within the Keaton School itself and digging deeper and finding more stories within that world. Otherwise, we're going to Stanford with Devin, and I don't know that the college years are necessarily the story that needs to be told.
Although, you know, timing-wise, the second novel, Hero Complex, picks up right after Escape Theory. I mean, like, just by a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
From a creative point of view, was that easier or harder? And doesn't that give you, because she's a junior, correct? And doesn't that, I mean, if each book is a month, you could really get a lot of books in the series.
Well, there's this pregnancy we're dealing with, and that became my kind of time marker, was how I honestly each book was kind of became a bit of a trimester in that sense of you could only advance time so far because of that storyline. And I kind of getting that baby, this future golden child, to play out properly. But I had moments in the second book of, I really would have loved to have jumped 6 months. Just because in the publishing world, you know, you start something and it seems like you're going to be on time to be current, and then all of a sudden a year has passed, and then, you know, things change, and then all of a sudden you're behind time. So I lost, you know, I started crossing off years and just kept dates kind of vague. But I'd love to jump forward more, but I don't know that the world I've set up allows for that. So I'm a little bit stuck.
Sue Grafton has kept her novels in the late 80s.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. I need to read her. She's actually a fellow Santa Barbara person. So I have heard her name bandied about a lot. That's interesting though. I didn't think of that. Yeah. I mean, it's like the Keaton stuff is not in it. I'm trying to keep it modern. There's always the balance of trying not to, you know, use cell phones too much, because all of a sudden technology will just date you so instantly. But it's YA, and cell phones and computers and Facebook are very much a prevalent part in teenage life. I don't know how I'd do that. Well, if I could spend time, I would, but I don't know that they can hold in that jello mold as much as I'd like them to.
Are you working on number three, and is there anything you can tell us about it specifically?
I have not started on number three yet. That's still, we're still talking about that. I've actually been focusing on my TV writing a little bit in the meantime. But what I know about three is I want to delve deeper into, basically the goal for the trilogy was to start with Devin as the ultimate insider and get her to be the ultimate, sorry, I said that wrong. Start her as the ultimate outsider. And by the end of the third, she's the ultimate insider. So the kind of flashback stories that we've been using, in Escape Theory and Hero Complex, does become personal to her again in book three. So it becomes kind of her story of what happened with her dad and her mom. And her, it's kind of a Devin origins tale. So we just kind of keep digging deeper into how Devin is the way she is.
Well, for those of you who haven't read Hero Complex, you really should, because the revelations are mind-boggling, and they come fast and furious. You're sort of,
oh, cool!
At the end, you're going, "What? What? Oh my God! I didn't see that coming. At least I didn't."
That's the scariest thing for me in writing a mystery, particularly just not feeling like I'm a real mystery buff, but constantly I just have people read and just say, "Just call me if you figure out who did it by the end of page 10." Because if that doesn't work, then it doesn't matter how good the language is. If I can't trick you into the mystery, I've completely failed.
Well, I have to ask, you know, it's been decades since the novels were written. But if you mention mysteries written for young people, the next words you always seem to hear are Nancy Drew and or Hardy Boys. Do you ever think YA mysteries will transcend that association, or should they even want to?
You know, I've gotten, which I take as a compliment, although I don't know that everyone's meant it as a compliment, I've gotten a lot of Veronica Mars comparisons, and I thought that's a good, that was a good sign of at least the genre has evolved a little bit, because I think also with readers, you know, a really iconic TV character like Veronica Mars and a book, you know, they become a little bit more fluid maybe than they did in the 50s, so... That I'm hoping maybe that we're evolving a little bit beyond the Nancy Drew of it all. That said, I'm you know, the more mysteries I read, the more I kind of feel like it's a pretty timeless genre. Like it's just, you know, the teen angst gets darker, the secrets definitely get darker. But a good mystery is a good mystery, and I feel like that kind of holds regardless of the decade.
And teenage years can be very, very dark, and not just, I mean, you know, it's like I wrote you in the email, I think that teenage years and the time you spend being a teenager can really be fraught with a lot of angst is the word you used. And that goes back to the 30s when teenagers were aware enough to know that there was a war coming and they were the ones that were going to be fighting it. It's teenagers are aware enough to see it coming and yet powerless to do anything about it. It's sort of the ultimate frustration. And I see that in Devon. I mean, she's so bright and so perceptive and she sees these things coming. She tries to, you know, a little like Cassandra, she tries to warn people and nobody listens.
Yeah. I think, I mean, there's something about, you know, 14, 15, you're smart. Your brain is not fully developed, but really getting there. You know a lot of what's happening, and particularly for like smart, perceptive kids, you know, the only thing kind of holding you back is you can't drive yet, you can't vote yet. I mean, it's a real frustrating time to be smart enough and to have the wherewithal, you know. And like, you know, my thing that I kind of related to Devon with was, you know, when I was 13, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write screenplays. And I just kind of spent all this time begging people to teach me how to do this and trying to find ways to learn how to do this with not a whole lot of help, really. A lot of like, yeah, that's cute. You'll change your mind one day. You know, cut to 20 years later, I have not changed my mind. And I would have loved the jump start when I was 13. So, you know, I think if you have the drive, and Devon kind of knows she likes this psychology path, there's something really amazing about being able to dip your toes in those waters and get closer to your goals. And also that frustrating realization of you got a long way to go. It's going to be a while before kind of you get taken seriously.
Well, you said you weren't a mystery reader necessarily growing up, but what writers did influence you? Who did you read that influenced you?
You know, there were two books that really kind of blew my mind, and if I could get anywhere close to them when I'm starting with Escape Theory and then onwards to Hero Complex, really Donna Tartt. I mean, Secret History was kind of one of those just mind-blowing, really rocked my world of a book. And it's funny because I wouldn't necessarily categorize that as a mystery, but there's a real kind of slow burn of a story there. And then similarly with Marisha, I'm going to mispronounce her name, Marisha Pessel, I believe.
Yes.
I have like such a like writer crush on her. It's one of those just, you know, you want to just walk away and never write anything again because there's no way you'll ever be near her. But again, like she, you know, what's it? Special Topics in Comedy Physics.
Yes.
Is a mystery. But again, I don't know that that it's under the mystery section at Barnes & Noble. So I feel like it's kind of these untraditional mysteries that are more about just great characters and a great story, and they happen to be taking you along for a ride. But beyond those two, you know, honestly, the book that really blew me away, this was years ago, but was the Stephen King's The Shining. And I remember reading it after I'd seen the movie, and, you know, the movie is its own work of art, and then reading the book and having that, like, oh my God, the book is its own fantastic work of art as well, and it so stands on its own, and again, not a mystery, but just that creepy, slow burn that was very accessible, which you know, I just, if I get anywhere near that, I'm happy.
And you'll never look at a shower curtain the same way again.
Oh my God, seriously.
I always ask young writers, and you are a television writer, but I'm always interested, what made you want to write a book? It's so old school. It's so analog.
I feel like analog is the new cool thing. That's not why I wrote a book, but just I've been using the term analog as well. I got a record player. It's one of those, like, I got my old Polaroid out, and my you know, younger 20-year-old brother-in-law thinks it's, like, really cool to use film. You know, there was something about the book that was kind of just uncharted territory. And I also I was a little too gung-ho without knowing fully what I was jumping into, because, you know, I love screenwriting and TV. It's quick. You can knock out pages quickly, and you plot it quickly. And I really thought that that would happen with the book. And it was a couple weeks in to writing Escape Theory that I had the realization of, oh, this is a whole other skill set. This is a whole other craft. And at that point, and I had that moment of, oh my God, people get degrees in just this. Can I quickly just go get a master's degree and then I'll come back and finish the book? I felt actually very underprepared. I really just kind of studied as much as I could and found authors that I found inspiring. Just wanted to kind of, it was a different headspace. I don't know why I chose the book. It sounded really fun at the time, and I definitely kicked myself along the way because it was just a whole different exercise. And by the end, it was really rewarding, and it just, it's a hell of a deeper dig, I'll tell you that, than TV, I find.
Well, since you do write for television, any thoughts about turning this into a series, or, you know, either big screen or small screen?
My gripe is always that I really haven't seen Boarding School done well on TV, and Gossip Girl was not it. If anybody says that that's the answer, that is not. I feel like there's a show here. The bummer, I think, with the market right now is unless Devin became a ghost or she started killing people, this is not a TV show. It's not quite big enough of a concept. I do think the first book, I do think Escape Theory would actually be a pretty good standalone movie in and of itself, because, again, I love the world. I think it's rich. I think the characters have a lot of, you know, kind of depth to them that an actor would enjoy. But it's I've pitched this a handful of places actually as a show and really kind of blown it up and expanded the world and gone more into Santa Cruz and different family members and embrace the adult characters more. And that version I like, but it still becomes pretty dark and soapy, and it's not quite of the market right now, I'm finding.
Well, you know, we'll just have to read about Devin McIntosh then.
Yeah, and sadly, we're just going to have to read a book.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing that a writer once said to me, Robert Craze, who's a mystery writer who writes about Los Angeles, and he said that writing a book is an incomplete art, and it's only completed when the reader reads it. And
I always thought
that was, you know, that completes the circle, and it's a much different experience to read a book and absorb the story that way than to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think both are remarkable accomplishments, but like you said, you know, you jumped into this with both feet, and I think it's a remarkable accomplishment. Both books are really, really good. Both could be standalones, but together they really pack a wallop of a story, And it doesn't necessarily really fall into the category of YA, except that the character happens to be 15 and 16 years old.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, thank you for that, by the way. That was really my goal was, you know, I love reading YA and I'm not the target audience, nor are my friends who also enjoy reading a good YA book. So, and really, you know, I wrote this for my boarding school friends and I thought if I could get them on board with this world and it didn't ring false to them, and that they also enjoyed the read, that it was kind of mission accomplished. And a lot of my friends, it was funny because a handful of my boarding school friends, because they just knew this world very well, gave me a lot of like angry, like, damn you, I really just want to go back to high school right now kind of emails. like total just like angry nostalgia. so that was a good, you know, there's something about like, I worked at MTV for a little bit, and there's something about not talking down to teenagers, and I felt like this was also my goal here, was this isn't pandering to a teenage audience. This happens to be a book about teenagers. If you're 15, you want to read it, great. If you're 30 and you want to read it, great. I don't know that, yes, the age of the protagonist matters, but it's, you know, even the Hunger Games, these are not teenage problems only. So I think there's something really nice and accessible about trying to, you know, find that universality in people's past and stuff like that.
Thank you so much for joining us, Margot. And I wish you a tremendous amount of luck. I mean, I think that, and before we sign off, wait, you've been nominated.
Oh, I know. That shocked the heck out of me. I was very surprised. I'm learning all about, I'm going to mispronounce it, BoucherCon. It was one of those emails that was like, you've been nominated. And it was, writers don't get those emails that it just was like, this is junk mail, right? This is a real thing. Like I had that moment of, this is not real. I'm very excited to go hang out with a bunch of mystery writers. I've been listening to your podcast, to some of the writers that are going to be at BoucherCon, just to kind of study up. And I feel incredibly underprepared and also undereducated comparatively, but I'm very excited to hear some of these authors, and actually you've inspired me to pick up a couple of their books as well. So I'm really looking forward to kind of delving deeper into that world.
Well, we look forward to seeing you, but I wish you a lot of luck. I mean, I think both books are fantastic and I enjoyed reading them a great deal.
Thank you. I don't consider myself a real mystery person. So for that, I felt like a real warm welcome into a very exclusive club. So it was a very nice honor of like, wow, they think I'm a mystery person. I must have done something right.
Well, you are now, I guess.
I am now, and I should wear it proudly. So I'm thrilled.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Margot also plans to record a reading from Hero Complex for Speaking of Mysteries. As soon as it's published on the site and in iTunes, I'll send out a tweet. Coming up in the next few weeks, we have an interview with Bradford Morrow speaking about his new mystery, The Forgers, John Lawton, who tells us tales about his about-to-be-released Sweet Sunday, as well as news about the sequel to Then We Take Berlin and the Inspector Troy series. And to tell us what makes a mystery good, at least in his opinion, is Tom Nolan, who reviews mysteries and thrillers for the Wall Street Journal. Until next time, this is Nancy Clare. Thank you for listening to Speaking of Mysteries.